Class is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Click. To be completely open with the Board of Public Works. When I announced a couple of weeks ago, which surprised people, particularly here in the State House, that we were going to come back, my response to the folks here on the second floor was, you open the State House, so that means Board of Public Works open again. So we all agreed to a hybrid setting, and there is a benefit actually for some of when we think about the agencies that come down, and they in many cases bring five or six people with them to testify about one event, and they all drive separate vehicles and they take a couple of hours out of a productive day to stand around in case they get a question, that they could very well sit at their desk. And if they get that question, to pop on a screen or pop on a call to answer those particular questions. So it's something that, you know, John, maybe we should think about, you know, in the future in terms of just, you know, the efficiency of using technology, as well as having people in person testimonies, but utilizing that, particularly for our state employees who are maybe driving in from other places for just one or, you know, possible question that they may get. I will give just a very quick update on the coronavirus pandemic. As most of you know, it was announced earlier in the week that the state has reached at least one vaccine for a little over 70% of our adult population. Overall, when you include the total population, it's about 57% have received at least one shot, and we're getting close to 50% of our total population fully vaccinated. We still have a ways to go. I think we are starting to hit the resistance and hesitancy wall, and it's probably not a strong wall. There's going to be some, I think, some segment that just will never want to get a vaccine. But we're now hitting those people that haven't gotten around to it or are a little hesitant. And so we've changed the kind of the strategy to reach those folks, to really try to reach out to them where they are. We have a summer vaccine tour, which some people have called the Summer of Love. Not to be confused with 1968, Bruce, not to be confused with that. But going to different events that occurred during the summer to have pop-up vaccine sites, like the barbecue tournament or barbecue festival and different festivals that take place and some back at the county fairs and things of that nature, to try to reach more people where they are that to get the vaccines out as much as possible. One of the good trends that we're seeing is that now that Pfizer has been approved for 12 to 17 year olds, we're definitely seeing a surge of that, the younger people. I think it's parents who've already gotten vaccines. They're bringing their kids so they can send them off to camp, get rid of them for the summer.
I'm not sure I would put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe not. No, they want them to enjoy the great outdoors away from them. And so those are good signs. And so we'll continue to see that. And speaking of the great outdoors, as we've talked about many times, and as both the treasurer and comptroller know that I've been doing the park tours, but there's more to do this summer, including not just the parks. And Madam Secretary, thank you. I think we're up to, I've gone to over 40, I don't know the exact number,
That's right.
out of 75 parks,
I believe.
So we still have a little bit more to go. But there's also the ice cream tour, going to the creameries around the state. So you can visit different parts of the state, enjoy the fresh ice cream from some of our dairies that are still in operation, that are selling that fresh ice cream. And so it's something that's, you know, something that's great on a summer day, a nice drive, and if you want to, you can go to a park nearby. So with that,
how many creameries?
I want to say 11. There are 11 in the state, ranging from Cecil.
Blog, letting everybody know, because those creameries are going to get a lot of business if they.
There are some that are trying to get me to add that to my park tour, to creamery tour, but I'm a little concerned about my waistline on doing that. So we'll see. I'll have to revisit the parks if I do that. So with that said, again, it's great to be in the presence of the treasurer and comptroller. And with that, I'll turn to the treasurer for comments.
Thank you. Well, it is so good to be back. I can't tell you, even if we're turned around a little bit,
yes,
in this great room, it's great to be back, and it's great that Maryland is doing well in terms of recovery, both in terms of the pandemic and, at least until now, economically. I'd just like to mention a couple of things since we met before. Of course, one was Memorial Day.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. That was
a memorable Memorial Day. It was one of the first times that I have not gone to Arlington to visit my parents, who were buried there, but certainly thought of them, and I know many others did, and just really a moment to pause and appreciate. And another moment to pause and appreciate came yesterday at the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa Massacre, an event that most of our school children never learned about and should, and I hope from now on will. America has a long way to go, but recognizing it is the first step towards the future. And I think it's really a great thing that in this past year, a lot of blinders have been removed and a lot of lessons learned, and the potential for going forward more equitably, more openly, towards a shared future, I think has never been so great, just as it has never been quite so openly challenged. And every week we are learning something new. The other thing this month I don't want to let pass is Pride Month, and the fact that we are all celebrating inclusion, recognition, and the importance of all individuals. I think it's just one more example of bright future we could have. I will only mention in passing, Governor, that I know the decision that Governor Hogan has made regarding unemployment insurance. I strongly disagree with that decision. I believe most people are not working because the $300, which will now be taken away from them, mostly single women, actually, with children or dependents, older dependents. And taking $300 away is not going to allow them to go to leave their dependents. It's only going to make them live in greater misery. But that is the governor's decision. And with that, I've said enough.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, Governor. And I would like to associate myself with your remarks and remarks of the treasurer. And I was in Elkton for the Memorial Day parade on Monday. I agree with her on the other subjects that she brought up. Madam Treasurer, thank you for your normal eloquence. I'm fully vaccinated. So I say that to everybody because I want to say it. It took me months to remember to take my mask with me. The number of times I had to turn my car around and go back to my house to get the mask in the early days It took me a long time to get myself trained. Now I'm trying to train myself to be normal and not wear a mask and yes. be vaccinated and urge other people, as you did, Lieutenant Governor, to get vaccinated because that's the way out of this pandemic. I would like to follow up on the treasurer. I also found it exceedingly disappointing to hear the news yesterday that Governor Hogan joins a growing list of Republican governors in ending a critical economic lifeline to tens of thousands of Marylanders who still, through no fault of their own, find themselves without a job. We seem to do this all the time in this country. We get into a tight situation and we somehow figure out a way to give money to people that may or may not need it and take money from the lowest wage earners. And we're doing this despite the fact that more than a year later and after millions of dollars in staffing and services contracts, the State Department of Labor still can't manage to process unemployment claims expeditiously, answer the phones or emails in a timely fashion, and thousands of Marylanders still find themselves in adjudication. I will mention that they've given out $12.3 billion in unemployment benefits, but good luck trying to get something resolved. And we're estimating that there is a significant amount of completely unnecessary fraud that went on with that enormous expenditure of federal and state unemployment. Well, unemployment checks. We'll get to the bottom of that later this year. Just last week, according to data from the Department of Labor, 15,182 Marylanders filed for unemployment, nearly 6,000 of them being categorized under the federal pandemic unemployment assistance. And they would be and will be directly impacted by the governor's actions today. We're talking about an extra $300 per week in federal money to low-wage earners and gig workers and sole employers, most of whom have been devastated by this economic and public health catastrophe. It was supposed to run out anyway, September 6th. But instead, we're taking advantage of some complaints, I guess, to end it prematurely, 2 months early. If we were to forego the additional federal unemployment assistance, according to my revenue estimating experts, we're talking about losing $1.5 billion in additional economic stimulus between now and September when this program is already scheduled to end.
Just repeat that number.
We're giving up voluntarily $1.5 billion in additional economic stimulus. And it's not even our money. It's coming from Washington. It's not like we're talking about millions of dollars in tax breaks to rich corporations and billionaires. Obviously, they have had tremendous benefits doled out to them. Unemployment benefits not only help those who are hurting, but down in the out, the lowest wage earners, the bottom one-third of our workforce, but those benefits have been economic multipliers and have helped our local businesses and helped the economy everywhere in the state of Maryland, much more broadly than just the recipients, by providing them, the small businesses around the state, with more customers who have more money to spend with them. What's more, for the millions of Marylanders that are in hard times, this money is virtually guaranteed to be spent rather than be saved in the bank because their need is so great. And remember, most of their relief, federally and state, is filtered through the Earned Income Tax Credit Program, which is something that leaves out tens of thousands of Maryland families, many of them, as the treasurer noted, single moms with kids. This means that unemployment benefits are one of the surest measures of delivering multiple benefits to workers and businesses alike, making it an efficient and effective stimulus. At the end of the day, this is about compassion for those who are suffering through no fault of their own. The end of the pandemic is in sight, right around the corner, and we owe them a bridge to it so that they can soon return to safe, productive living. Instead, we're getting within sight of the shore.
And what are we doing? We throw some of the passengers we're responsible for overboard and tell them to swim for it.
Because we're scared if we continue building that bridge to normalcy, some might not use it.
I mentioned the predicted fraud in the unemployment benefits. There is fraud. It's unfortunate. We're opposed to it. But we don't stop the relief plan because some people abuse it. This is a public policy decision that lacks compassion. I find it deeply troubling and unfortunate that the governor has chosen to go down this path that will further devastate the lives and livelihoods of the most vulnerable among us. I respectfully urge the leadership of the General Assembly to consider all options, including come back, convene a special session to reverse the governor's decision, because Marylanders frankly deserve better than this. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you.
Well said.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well said, but I agree with the governor on this. Secretary.
Morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, John Gontram, Executive Secretary of the Board of Public Works. There are 13 items on the Secretary's agenda and 3 reports of emergency procurements. Item 11 is being withdrawn at the request of the agency. Items 3 and 4 relate to final adoption of the Board's proposed Title Wetlands Licensing Regulations. I'm happy to assist answering any questions.
Questions for the Secretary? Agenda?
Move approval.
Treasurer agrees.
Second.
Okay. I think we're all in favor.
Very good. Very good to see you all.
See you. And we're still doing testing at Orioles Park. All right, Department of Natural Resources.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Jeannie Hadaway Riccio, Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We have 5 items on our real property agenda today for which we are seeking approval, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
I don't have any questions.
How many parks are there?
We have 75 state parks in our system.
I think the Lieutenant Governor is the first person to visit all 75, or will be.
Will be. I don't know.
I'm impressed by that.
Well, let's say first maybe elected official. I don't know if even that, but I'm quite sure there's some Marylanders out there that have hit all the parks.
Yeah, it's a great question.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you are the highest ranking and probably elected official to do it so far.
And I have to say, it wasn't an original idea. I read a story, and this was a couple of years ago, and Governor McAuliffe was still in office, and I guess he's possibly going to come back to office in Virginia. And he said he was trying to go to every park in the state during his term. And I said, it's a good idea.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
You should write a book about it.
No. I'll have to remember all the parts. they kind of start merging together a little bit. Yeah, it's a scrapbook. I should. So, and the Secretary has been with me on, I think, almost all of the parks. We've been in the rain, we've been in the snow, and the mud, and the heat. I even got Lyme disease during, probably one of them. And so I've recovered.
Yeah, are you keeping a journal?
That's only in my mind, but maybe that's what I need to do. We have the electronic photographs, so a lot of that will come back. We have electronic, information that could be fleshed out in some journals.
And the map.
And the map. The map is on my website. Yeah. So, okay. With no questions, we have a motion, or did we already take it?
I think took it.
Oh, we already took it.
We seconded.
Need a motion and a vote.
Natural resources.
You said we do?
There's a motion, correct?
Okay. Did we get a second?
Yes.
Okay.
Did get a second.
All right. So we're all in favor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Start talking about parks, I got thrown off. University system.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Tom Hickey, representing University System of Maryland. We have 2 items for your consideration this morning and are happy to answer any questions you may have.
On the university system, there are 2.
I don't know.
Tom, I hope you'll relay to the president of the University of Maryland Eastern Shore our thanks for their very prompt and thorough response to our question. It's a significant change. Item 2, natural gas distribution. We are still looking for the end of the bridge when we are able to stop using a bridge fossil fuel. But it does look as though this move is both good for the environment, good for the air, and good for the budget. And I believe that the funds saved, which will be significant, will be put into new renewable energy sources for the university. Is that
correct? That's correct.
Thank you.
Very good. So do we have a motion on the university?
Move to approve.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Greg Slater, Secretary, Maryland Department of Transportation. The Maryland Department of Transportation is presenting 15 items for your consideration today, and we have representatives available to answer any questions.
Who's in your MTA administrator?
It's going to Vancouver.
Beautiful city.
It is. He went there for a conference and said he fell in love with it, and then a headhunter called him one day and said, would you be interested in applying? And he did. I'm not sure I could have talked my whole family into a move like that, but he did.
Well, there's some very significant items that he accomplished before us prior to his departure, which
he did. Kevin did an amazing job in a very challenging time. You know, it's one of the challenges we have with our Baltimore Transit system is we're really a diverse kind of mid-sized system. And when you have someone that has success in a system like that, those larger systems will tend to look for those types of leaders. But I can't thank Kevin enough. He did an amazing job, and I learned a lot from him when I came into this role as well.
That's great. Well, it does look to me as though the MTA items here, particularly 3 and 4, and agreements with CSX.
Right.
We've been struggling for a long time to get agreements with CSX. And if he had to leave on a high note, that's a very high note. Congratulate you and him.
Thank you.
It's not an inexpensive note.
No.
But it's an investment that is really, I believe, going to continue to grow our mass transit in a very significant way, just like the tunnel.
Absolutely. And, you know, you look at CSX, where any day now we're expecting our decision on Howard Street Tunnel from the Federal Rail Administration. That'll be another CSX agreement that will be tremendous. And, you know, just trying to find a path for passenger rail and freight rail around that region.
Could I just give credit where credit's due? Obviously, Secretary Slater and Administrator Quinn are very important here, but I would like to give due credit to Governor Tunnel, particularly because that has been a burr under the state saddle for a long time.
Right.
And hats off to the administration and to its team for making that happen. I actually, these two items, I agree with the treasurer, show how important transit issues are and how difficult they are to address, particularly when you have CSX and a history of frayed relations there on some of those issues. But I wonder if we could hear from Administrator Quinn. Everybody's mentioned that he's leaving us. He's going to be CEO of TransLink, I guess. And I wonder if the ambassador or the administrator,
ambassador.
Maybe he'd like to say something and about how important you know, mass transit is to the state as far as getting people to and from work and home.
Absolutely. Administrator Quinn, I believe he's on the phone. Maybe he'll kind of come in and say a few remarks about, you know, the legacy. I think, you know, one of the things that Kevin has done a really amazing job at, on top of the really tangible things, is he's built a pretty solid team over there. And we're now at a first time where they have leadership at a variety of different levels. We have Holly Arnold, who has agreed to step in, who was one of the deputies, to take over in that acting capacity and really just kind of without missing a beat, just continue to make progress. Kevin, are you on?
Are you? Can you see me okay?
Right.
You have your British.
Left, no tie.
Yeah, you got your...
Hey, it's all good today.
That's great.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Thanks for having me, Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I appreciate your kind words. We've done a lot of great things at MTA. Certainly with your support, we brought some great items before you, Madam Treasurer. I certainly specifically appreciate your push for, renewable fuels and better vehicles for us. That's been a real push for us that Secretary Slater and the administration have certainly embraced. And so thank you for that. I think that's gotten us certainly going in the right direction, again, with the Secretary's support. We're on a great path in Baltimore. We've got a fantastic team, acting administrator. Holly Arnold's going to do a fantastic job. She's already hitting the ground running, and we've got a great team in place. And so I'm excited for where we've going. I think we've done some good things. The CSX item in front of you is a great agreement that sets us in place to be able to evaluate expansion in the future in a really great way. I want to thank you and the governor for all the support over the years. Vancouver awaits for the Quinn family, so thank you.
Yeah, but you're only allowed 2 years.
Then you've got
to come back and help us out.
Absolutely.
But in those two years, Kevin, you're going to have a lot of visitors.
That's true.
It is a beautiful city.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay, any other questions on transportation?
Move approval.
Second.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. The Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Maryland Department of General Services. Today, we are presenting 62 items on our agenda, including two supplementals for your consideration. Please note that item 39 has been revised to align with the base amount and term reflected on the agenda item. Department is also withdrawing item 40 and 59. Of note, within our agenda, there are 16 capital grants and loans featuring $3.7 million supporting schools and universities throughout Maryland. And additionally, the agenda supports contracts for 10 minority businesses and 18 small businesses small business enterprises. And we're available to answer your questions at this time.
Good. The CGL's capital grants and loan program is an excellent program. I'm just pointing out Kennedy Krieger's hospital, which is an excellent, use the comptroller's often used term, is a jewel for Maryland. Really puts us at the forefront of, services to children who are injured. I had an opportunity maybe a month ago to go there and tour their spinal recovery center. And, a number of kids, I spoke to a young man who had been involved in a car accident and had to learn to walk again and because he had severe spinal injuries and did real well in terms of the coordination and walking and just getting back to normalcy and had been there for months. When he first got there, he could not walk. And is walking now, and so and then seeing people who were at the stage where he was and what they go through to get back to being a child. And so they do wonderful work over there, and I just wanted to point that out. I also wanted to point out, unless there's 23S, I know it's a single, but the residential camp and counselor program, siblings summer camp, and for foster kids and their siblings. And I just think that's an excellent program. We talked about early on young people getting vaccinations so that they can be sent to camp. A lot of kids, particularly in the foster system, don't have the opportunities to go to a summer camp and get out do the things that kids do when they get outdoors and to explore and get involved in activities, get more mosquito bites, but just all those things that, you know, are fun as a child. And so I think this is a wonderful program. I'm glad to see that the state is able to do that. Can anyone have questions as I go through some of mine?
No, could I just mention, since we're mentioning great programs, and I know the comptroller knows it well, item 12, A Wider Circle, which is a wonderful organization that reaches out, helps particularly women re-enter the workforce, both with training, with clothing, with contacts and network, especially now in light of the what we mentioned previously about the need for people to re-enter, not the workforce, because people have been working at home, but going to a public workplace is a great time for this organization, I believe, to be a model for organizations around the state. I really urge people to look at A Wider Circle and see how it can be adapted for different parts of the state. It's a great model.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate, support the treasurer and lieutenant governor. These programs are relatively small as far as dollar amounts. Sometimes they can get a little bigger, but it's capital dollars, and they're incredibly important recipients all over the state to get them. One of them I noticed, item 7, is the Franciscan Center in Baltimore. What an amazing group that is. They provide services and support to vulnerable people and kids. And I want to give a special shout out to my friend and the center's dedicated leader, Jeffrey Griffin, convey my thanks to the entire staff, volunteers, and benefactors. I'll just mention it for the record that these are bipartisan. I mean, there is no acrimony over adversarial approach at all. The Franciscan Center is fabulous. And then I also wanted to mention a special one, the Hero Dogs, which is item 8. That was a place that I visited in Brookville. A little bit of money goes a long way with them. It's a terrific group that raises, trains, and places service dogs with veterans of the U.S. military and first responders with disabilities. I'm delighted to see that they're receiving some state funds today, and I want to thank the organization's founder, Dr. Jen Long, and the executive director, Nikki Charles, for their leadership in supporting our nation's law enforcement and military veterans. Hero Dogs.
Yeah. Very good program. Did you see the puppies when you went out there?
I did. I have a hat that I wear around town called Hero Dogs, and people find that to be very...
right. Very, they have not been there.
Yes, yeah. They have not been
there. They can have all kinds of thoughts about that.
But yes. Thank you.
Very good. I think I saw an explanation with regard to 30S. It's a contract that's maximizing third-party recoveries. Significant difference between the two bidders, and I'm not sure why Accenture was $31 million more than the $5 million bid from Health Management.
Well, my understanding is that the awardee is an incumbent and fully aware of the needs of the program, and that the contract price was certainly in line, that Accenture is new, and that there may have been some additional considerations as a part of covering the contract. But we do have Secretary Schrader on the line if the board would like to hear any more of an explanation.
I don't know if the others.
No, I think it certainly caught my eye.
Yes, right.
The explanation they give is startup costs, but that's a lot of startup costs.
Right.
That is a lot of startup costs, and I can't speak for Accenture at this time, but I know that the department is very comfortable with
Health Management.
Health Management.
Yes. And this, and maybe it's Secretary Schrader can answer. Does Health Management provide the service in other states? Because I think that might have been part of Accenture's, where Accenture's just trying to enter the marketplace, and it's kind of a higher bar.
You're muted.
I think you're on mute. You're on mute.
About 40 states.
Secretary, you're on mute, or and someone's staring into the.
Okay, hang on.
There we go.
All right, great. Thank you. We have, this is the fourth rebid of this particular contract. This is the first time we've been able to get another contractor over the, it's been over a period of 2.5 years because each time we only got one bid, so we kept going back to the market. This was the first time we got a competitive bid. The HMS is the dominant player in 40 states across the country. So, okay, as I said, this is the fourth time. And when we did get an alternative bid, it wasn't, as you can see, the results. So we wish we had more competition, and we really pushed hard to get competition on this particular contract.
Mr. Secretary, what is the increase in cost between the existing contract with HMS? And then there is an increase.
Yeah, these numbers are very comparable with what we're currently spending, which is why we knew that the Accenture bid was unreasonable. And unfortunately, it made HMS very uncomfortable that we kept rebidding it and not going, you know, because we honored the request of this board. We refused to come back with just one bid. And now, unfortunately, we have two, but, you know, you can see there's one that's not a lot.
So you were, I appreciate it. I don't mean this the wrong way. You were ideologically pure. You kept going back to the market. But there was a cost to doing that, too.
I
have no question about one time.
Right.
But beyond that, sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a cost. And it's a cost to the business. To bid, there's a cost to them to bid as well. So. And that gets factored into pricing.
But I appreciate the work that you did on it. Just maybe we should use a little common sense.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Secretary, while I have you, 36-8 modification for the lab services contract with Sion. I had asked you separately about this item. I do understand that it was bid. They bid this contract out.
Yes.
And the bids came in yesterday, I believe. So this is really kind of a bridge to, you know, the award of a contract, because this one was under an emergency. This modification is a modification to an emergency contract that hopefully will get very good pricing with, I don't know how many. Did I hear that there were seven different entities?
More than 10 bidders.
Oh, more than 10. Good. So hopefully we will get really good pricing, and you know, we'll be able to terminate this contract before the end and then pick up a new vendor at that point.
Right, that's correct. This is intended to be a bridge. We've got the bids in, and we're going to aggressively hope. We want to be back to the board this summer with the results.
Very good. Okay. So, any other?
Yeah, I have a brief question on 40 IT, the grants office part of it. This allows, as I understand, the grants office, this allows a sole source for the historic trust,
mm-hmm.
and the grants office for the interim is going to take advantage of that. and use that while it's working on its own emergency, not emergency, its own contract for management of grants, which will not be ready for another 2 years or so. Is there anyone who can?
Yes, Madam Treasurer, we have Ann Raines, Deputy Director for the Maryland Historical Trust for the Department of Planning on the line. I believe she's on the line, but if she's not, I can look into your question.
My question is because it's not here on the public agenda, there is a commission or work group that's supposed to be working with the grants administrator on a new system. And as I understand it, there is a full intention for the governor's grants office to go off of the system and to go on to a new system, which will be, but not until they have worked with the people on this council, on the grants council. And that's what I would like to hear.
But I understand your question is more for the grants person who is not not attending the meeting.
I appreciate the support, trust, and it looks like a fine contract. I have no problem with it, but I do want to understand the role that the council will play in the ultimate award.
It would be appropriate to get back with you with that answer.
Since, thank you. I'm sorry, it just caught my eye.
No, that's fine.
Yeah.
Any questions from Ann? Hi, Ann. How are you?
Nice seeing you.
Move approval.
I have one last question before you move approval. This brand new supplemental item that was brought to us, 62S, $187 million for a contingent labor managed provider services contract. I know that the Department of Legislative Services has raised a number of questions about this. I had some questions about it too. It's a very large contract. And I am not clear on what the role of the different units of government, like DOIT, DGS, OSP, transportation is on all that. My question is, what harm would be done postponing it, deferring it till the next meeting?
Well, thank you, Madam Treasurer, for the question. And I believe the urgency at this point is through conversations and coordination with the Maryland Department of Information Technology, DOIT. There are a number of agencies that have been in the queue that are requiring.
Yes, I'm associated with a couple of them.
You are. And so the department certainly has been attempting to find a number of different options that can satisfy or attempt to work on the backlog that has been created. So in the scheme of things, 2 weeks, is there any great harm? No, but there is great urgency amongst a number of different departments to get moving with their procurements. And so this is just the first of a number of different vehicles that the department is looking to.
Well, that being the case, it seems to me even more appropriate that we have a more thorough briefing on where we are and what this contract means and what else is coming along. I am associated with a number of commissions, boards that are looking exactly for something like that. And I understand the problems that the Department of IT has in recruiting and keeping people. But I still think almost $200 million is worth 2 weeks learning about.
Well, that is the intergovernmental cap.
Right. Not to exceed.
Yes. Right. And my understanding, and of course, Secretary Leahy can give more information concerning the number of contracts and believed contract value that are waiting in a total queue to be able to use this in part. We did brief the board at the last pre-board meeting and responded to all of those questions. So we are waiting for it for further questions.
Yes, something that brief is members of the board. Yes. Or staff.
The staff.
That's right.
Or staff. Yes.
I really would.
If you prefer, we can. I think the secretary said, while there's a sense of urgency, it's not earth threatening.
And I share the sense of urgency, lest anyone have any question. I do understand it, but it's $200 million.
Yeah. So we'll give more details, and we look forward to hearing.
So we'll defer this item.
Yeah, could you just also explain why the contracts work orders do not come before the board necessarily? I'm just noticed this as one of my items at the end, that work orders under this contract would not come before the BPW for approval. That we've dealt with that issue at one point.
We had dealt with that issue. We have Bob Gleason, our chief procurement officer, or Mike Hafley, our deputy chief procurement officer, who has had conversations with the board staff concerning the clarifying language around this topic.
Well, I'm supportive of the treasurer, and
we can defer it. But I think that situation is because this entity would be doing a secondary competition to, assign the temporary staff that would come in. So because it's not Gleason's group or Churchill's group, actually a state agency doing this task order, which we find under the CATS mm-hmm. contract, it's a little different because this agency would be hiring during the secondary. So it's almost like a subcontractor in a sense.
I think two weeks doesn't hurt.
No, I agree. We're going to defer this item.
The department will withdraw item 62 and bring it to our next board meeting.
Okay.
Move approval as amended. Thank you, Madam Treasurer.
Second.
Okay. All in favor, and welcome back, everyone, and the Bruces.
Okay, thank you,
Governor.
Thank you.
Valerie, how are you?